AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Matt Hunter here. I want to say, just for the record, I did try to reach out to Ilhan Omar's people. Yeah, I got a chance of getting her on the air at this point. And that's nothing critical. I mean, she has become a national story. And it should be, you know, acknowledged that this is a national story. So it's an international story, as a matter of fact, at this point. So, but I did say, if you'd like to come back and talk to us, you can. I do have a link, by the way, to Stein's interview with Amy Klobuchar. And I'll make sure I link that up. We mentioned that yesterday on the show that he gets to interview all the presidential candidates. I'm like, hi, how are you? But we'll post that interview that he did over there, which is a good one. We'll get that one posted online for you a little bit later on. I'm going to start off. I'm going to avoid the porn trucker. You know that story, right? Yeah, well, there is a comical nature. A person died because this dude was watching porn while driving. Well, allegedly. I'm not going to touch, go look at porn truck driver. Well, make sure you're careful about that.
I could be
sending you in on a bad, bad path. The car accident caused by porn. Maybe that's the search you should do. But you can look at that. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go with a good story. I'm going to go with a good story from our local guys here, Target. And I want to give Target credit here because this is less a story that probably is going to get overlooked. But I have had friends who have kids with disabilities. Trying to find costumes for them is always tough. Parents of children with disabilities often go out of their way to make creative Halloween costumes. This year, they will have the option of buying them at Target. The boutique Hide and Eek. It targets Hide and Eek. Have they named the section of the store now where they have the Halloween stuff? Which, by the way, is worth a good 45 minutes to an hour if you ever go in there. They unveil two Halloween costumes adapted for wheelchair users. The company hopes it will help even more children take part of the holiday fun. One of the collection's wheelchair covers transforms the chair into a purple princess carriage. The other one turns the chair into a pirate ship, complete with a Jolly Roger flag and waves for the wheels. There are also two new costumes with flat seams and no tags for children with sensory issues, a shark and a unicorn. 2 years ago, the chain added clothing designed for children with sensory processing sensitivities, which can include autism. Designers removed itchy tags, seams, and other details that the children could find irritating and uncomfortable. Through the collections, the company saw the changing small details of its designs could have a huge impact, according to a Target spokeswoman. Target also unveiled a series of sensory-friendly home items this spring. Good for you. Good for you. I've had friends who have had to, you know, they'd be starting on their Halloween costumes now because they would have to build one. And some of those are magnificent. The one guy that basically turned his kid's wheelchair into a truck, an actual working truck with lights and horns.
That's right. That was cool.
That was one. And then one was a TIE fighter. You ever see the TIE fighter one, which was great?
I gotta look that up.
That was a good one. That was a good one. But, you know, it for a lot of people, if you don't have the time or the carpentry skills to put something like that together or the electronic skills, you know, this is a good thing. Target, good for you. You're not going to get a lot of press, especially in the crazy train that is this country, but you deserve some good press on that because that is a good deal. And good for you. Nice job. All right. Now, that all being said, let's get into the crap fest, shall we? let's go to I got a new song I'm going to debut here. Ooh. for about last night's Trump rally, all right? Ready? All right.
Yeah.
Dun da dun da dun da dun da dun dun dun. If you were at Trump's rally, you're a racist. If you were at Trump's rally, you're a racist. If you were at Trump's rally, you're a racist. And that's the end of the song. That's it. If you were at Trump's rally, guess what? You're a racist. And you were. And how dare you, Matt? How dare you? No, you're a racist. No, you're a bunch of racists. You're a bunch of racists. And I'm going to start off, I think, by going down, because we had, was it Dan in Hopkins called the other day, and he wanted to say, how is saying go back to your country, is that racist? Okay. All right, I'm improvising the breathing. But you kind of get the point. Well, in case you want to know, thanks to The Guardian from a 2017 story, Minnie Jean Brown Turkey didn't intend to make a political statement when she set off with two friends for her first day at high school. She was, after all, only 15. I mean, part of growing up in a segregated society is that it's a little sort of enclave and you know everybody, says Turkey, who is African-American. So I was thinking, wow, can I meet some other kids? Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas seemed to have a lot going on. The black school was kind of far away and there was no bus, she says. We went to get new shoes and they were really trying to decide whether to wear, so we were very teenage-esque about it, just totally naive. In September of 1957, the Jim Crow era of racial segregation and nine black pupils little guessed that they were about to plant a milestone in the struggle for civil rights to follow those of Emmett Till, a 14-year-old who was lynched in Mississippi in 1955. And Rosa Parks, who refused to give up her seat to a white passenger on a bus in Alabama later the same year. Brown versus the Board of Education, the landmark 1954 Supreme Court ruling that segregated schools were unconstitutional, should have meant that she and her fellow pupils could take their places at Central High. But Governor Orville Faubus of Arkansas and the Deep South remained defiant and used the National Guard to block their enrollment. The African-American children were left in limbo for 3 weeks. On the first day of term, the National Guard were there to stop the nine from entering Central High, where all 1,900 attendees were white. 3 weeks later, on the 25th of September, the group braved the hostile white crowd, climbed the school steps, and were escorted to class by U.S. Army troops. They became known and revered as the Little Rock Nine. Eight of the nine are still living and will return to Little Rock on Monday. This is basically from a few years back on the 60th anniversary of the U.S. first major battle over school segregation. A day later, several will be in Washington to speak at the Smithsonian National Museum. The share of intentionally segregated black schools has trebled over the last 25 years, according to research in the Civil Rights Project at the University of California, Los Angeles, which warns of resegregation taking hold. Tricky, who turned 76 earlier this month, asked bleakly, what kind of country doesn't see education for all children to be the primary value? I think the U.S. has two values, segregation, which they do so well, and violence. Speaking on phone with her longtime home in Canada, she can remember vividly the combination of segregation and violence that left her whole body shaking with fear and shock as a teenager 6 decades ago. On September 23rd, in 1957, the group did get into the building with police protection, but an angry mob of more than 1,000 white people had gathered in front of the school chanting racist abuse such as, "Go back to Africa." 1957. Go back to Africa. And now, and I want to make sure we understand this. This wasn't, you know, just incidental conversation. This was white people telling black people they were not welcome here and that they should go back to Africa. So when someone calls in and says, how come that's racist? He's just saying go back. When the white majority uses the term and has a history of using the term to encourage segregation of the races, and when defeated, that schools had to be desegregated, they sat and screamed at the African-American kids to go back to Africa. That is not incidental. That is history. That is the history of go back to. And it has been used time and time and time again by ignorant Caucasian jackasses who basically feel they're trying to save the white race. And they think of it as some sort of, I gotcha. It's like when I was a kid in high school in Georgia, the modified okay sign was pretty much well known at that point as a white power sign. It was a way for school kids, white school kids, in white photos to be able to put out a sign which was okayed by the school, even though the school knew it was a white power sign. They just did an okay sign, and when anyone complained, they said, well, they're just doing the okay sign. Well, they were doing the spread three fingers, so it was W, okay sign. And it's funny because when we started pointing this out, and we started pointing out Stephen Miller did the sign, and other people have done the modified white power okay sign while in the White House. And people said, well, it's just an okay sign. Well, then if it's just an okay sign, why is it every time the proud white supremacists take a photo, they've got the white power hand gesture out? If it, even if it didn't mean it, which it did, even if it didn't mean it, the fact that all the white power people now say it means it should be your warning that you shouldn't use it. So you trying to insist that a, what, 50 plus years of history on this, or excuse me, 60 plus years of history on this, 60 plus history years of history of white supremacists basically telling minorities to go back to is all of a sudden harmless banter because it was Trump. You are an idiot. And you're presuming we're all idiots because we can't possibly know the truth of the term. All you have to do is read about it. But I guarantee you, these people that want to defend it, they didn't even listen to a damn word I just said. Because if they did, they'd all said, wow, I guess, yeah, that does make sense. All right. He probably shouldn't have said it then. And they can't do that. They can't do that. There is something physically wrong with these people. All this racism that's coming from Trump and the silence that is coming from the politicians. It's coming from the Trump supporters. There comes a point where your silence is endorsement. You can look and say, you know what? This is wrong. I believe in the Republican Party because I'm for smaller government, less taxes. But and trust me, you and I could have a discussion all day long about whether the current Republican Party does anything like they used to, that whether or not that they are anything but a hollow shell of their fiscal conservative nature of what they used to be. But that aside, you can say, I support Republicans because I believe Republicans are better fiscal conservatives, but I sure as heck am not part of this obscene racism, this obscene level of unacceptable language and behavior. And you don't. You just sit there and whistle Dixie. And like I said, the best you can say, if you still support Donald Trump at this point, and I just gave you the history of go back to, which it's undeniable racism. It's undeniable racism. If you still support Trump, you may not be racist, but you're giving racism a warm, welcoming hug. And that's the best you can say about yourself right now. That is the best you can say about yourself, is that you're not Christians, because Jesus wasn't for racism and bigotry. He wasn't. He's about love and peace and understanding. So you can't say you're Christian. And by the way, you know, those people back then in the 1950s, they used the Bible to try to justify their segregation. In the same way that people today try to use it to justify the hatred of gays. No, this is about racism being displayed unquestionably by Trump. And what is your plan of attack on that? Do you come on out and condemn, or do you basically sit there and You know, and here's the sad part is I know a lot of these people are being silent. And, you know, if you question them, they're like, well, I just don't think that's appropriate. But trust me when I say this, they're itching at the bit that Trump comes through and does a rally here and that they can do the chant here. Oh, I was there. I was there when I said to Ilhan Omar to go back home. Send her back. If you're at a Trump rally, you're a racist. If you're at a Trump rally, you're a racist. If you're at a Trump rally, you're a racist. And you're not fooling anyone else anymore. Let's go to Jeff in Prior Lake before we go into the break here. Jeff, welcome on in.
Hey, Matt, great show. I wanted to help out Dan. Last night on Rachel Maddow, she went on to the U.S. government website on racism. And it listed on the U.S. government website on racism, the example that they gave is telling a person of color to go home.
Yes.
That was the example listed on the U.S. government website as an example of racism.
That's from the federal government. Those liberals within the Trump administration. And it's interesting. There has been an interesting development as Trump has been caught red-handed lying. I'll tell you what. Let me recant the Klan rally in North Carolina from last night that Trump head up. We'll recant that. We'll also talk about his response today, Omar's response to it, and apparently the narrative they're trying to push forward in regards to what Minnesota 5 really is. I'll talk about that when I do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
The number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is All Digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
Next time on Philosophy Talk, is postmodernism really to blame for post-truth?
Yeah, postmodernism made it respectable to deny sensible ideas, like truth and fact.
No, it didn't. It just said when you think about those ideas, you also have to think about power.
Yeah, but that's what led to today's alternative facts and fake news.
Oh, don't blame postmodernism for that.
Postmodernism and post-truth, next time on Philosophy Talk.
Philosophy Talk, every Sunday at 8 a.m. and again at 2 p.m. on AM 950.
Hi, I'm Dr. Scott Chambaud from Chambaud Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, get-you-out-of-pain-now dental office. We always offer a free exam and x-rays for new patients because we believe you shouldn't have to pay to find out what's wrong with your teeth. Call today. We're open early and late and Saturdays to fit your schedule. As my daughter Rachel says,
if you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth because they're the only ones you get. Call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH or visit fixmyteeth.us.
Eat fresh and support local farmers this summer by shopping at the Minneapolis Farmers Market. The market has the best selection of fresh and local fruits and vegetables, meats, and farmstead goods. Fresh at the market now, cherry tomatoes, cauliflower, broccoli, cucumbers, zucchini, beets, carrots, and even some new baby potatoes. The Minneapolis Farmers Market is open every day, 6 a.m. to 1 p.m. Plus, there's additional locations Tuesday at the Hennepin County Government Center and Thursdays at Nicollet Mall. More details at mplsfarmersmarket.com.
Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens is the first green cemetery in Minnesota. It's a beautiful, peaceful place where burials are celebrations of life with as little impact on the environment as possible. Tony Weber founded it because he wants to leave a green legacy for his grandchildren, something many of us might feel. Learn more, visit the website mngreengraves.com. Give them a call. The goal is so meaningful, so positive, it might be right for you. Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens.
Hunter, you know, I remember when Bernie Sanders was criticizing the government. I don't ever remember Trump telling him to go back to his ancestral home. Did you?
No.
What's the difference between Ilhan Omar and Bernie Sanders? We'll have to look into this. Get our crack investigative team in there.
We'll get the news team on it.
Get the news team. Get news team Action 950 in there. breaking down, why is it that he didn't tell Bernie Sanders to go home to his ancestral home, but he's told women of color to do that? It's a mystery. We may never ever figure that one out, Hunter. 952-946-6205. And by the way, the entire argument is, unless you agree with Trump, you need to go. Go away if you don't like Trump. Boy, oh boy, interesting attitude from the same people who screamed, Obama is Satan. He's destroying this country. I don't even remember people in mass telling you to get your ass out of here. I don't remember that. But all of a sudden, you don't agree with Trump, you need to go. Slime balls. 952-946-6205. Oh, so in case you missed it, here's a recap. President Donald Trump renewed his attacks on the four freshman Democrats in Congress, women of color, saying that if they don't like America, let them leave. Of his suggestion for the hate-filled extremists who are constantly trying to tear our country down, Trump said at a rally, Klan rally. For his re-election campaign in North Carolina on Wednesday, after finishing a long diatribe naming Democratic representatives Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, Ayanna Presley, and Rashid Tlaib. By the way, it was so funny. He's like, he didn't say their names in the tweet. Yeah, but the White House administration basically came out and identified those four congresswomen right away. So the mystery was solved. This is Trump. That's what I say. If they don't like it, let them leave, Trump said. If they don't love it, tell them to leave it. I'm just saying it's their choice. They can come back if they want. I think in some cases they hate our country, Trump added, doubling down once again. And they're so angry. Yeah, they hate our country so much. They're American citizens that ran for Congress and won in their districts. Yes. No, they love their country. They just hate you. And there is a difference between Trump and the country. Something that you guys used to point out every day when Obama was president, right? Then it gets worse and worse. There was a moment in the crowd when Trump went after Ilhan Omar, and to which the crowd launched into the racist jackasses of North Carolina, launched into a send her back chant on Ilhan Omar. Now, what's interesting is that was straight out of a Klan rally. I mean, that was Mississippi Burning right there. And they basically Trump, if you don't see the video, they start chanting. Trump stops and looks around. Yeah, yeah, yeah. 12 seconds of silence of Trump allowing them to chant, send her back. But now he clearly has gotten some pushback from someone. Because he's trying to distance himself from that, insisting day after President Trump's supporters broke out the racist chant that called for Ilhan Omar, who immigrated to the United States as a refugee when she was a child, to return to Somalia. He's now claiming that he was not happy with it and disagrees with that. Asked by reporters in the Oval Office on Thursday why he didn't attempt to stop the chant to send her back, Trump responded, I think I did. I started speaking very quickly. It was quite a chant. I felt like a little badly about it. The president let the chat go on for 13 seconds and never once told the crowd to stop. Put that in, by the way, I want to put that in conjunction with when John McCain was running for president in 2008. And he was in, where was it, Faribault? And the woman came down and said, Obama's a Muslim.
Yeah,
and he immediately said, no, no, give me your microphone. You're done talking. No, no, that's not right.
He said he's a decent, honest family man.
Yeah, no, he's not that.
And, Trump, could you imagine him ever saying something like that about Obama?
I thought you were talking about Trump. No, decent on no Trump's not a decent on family.
McCain
no,
said about Obama.
He does. We can disagree politically. I mean, McCain's comment was, we disagree politically. We don't disagree on that level. But no, Trump would have. Can you imagine if Trump was in that situation? Yeah, yeah, secret Muslim. That's what he would have done. That's everyone in that crowd there would have been like, yay, our pariah's here, yay. If you like Trump, you're likely racist. President let the chant go on for 13 seconds and never told the crowd to stop. It started up rather fast, Trump continued before going and said, I would like to say I was not happy with it. I disagree with it. But again, I didn't say that. They did. Right, yeah, I guarantee you this. He's not going to be stopping them from chanting it at the next rally. The president also claimed he'll certainly try to stop the chants in the future. The narrative today is that Minnesota 5, which, by the way, I'm in Minnesota 5. Are you in Minnesota 5? No, you're down south. You're down in 2. Three. You're 3?
Three.
Yeah. I'm in 5 by about 3 blocks. The argument is that Ilhan Omar only has gotten elected and Keith Ellison only got elected because this is a no-go zone. It's a no. It's all African-American people. It's 70% white, dude. It's 70% white. We look at the politicians on the merit of who they are, which brings me a quick little point, if I can, to Ilhan Omar. Representative Omar, I really feel bad for you today because no one wants to ever be put in the position that you're put in. This is thrust upon you, usually by negative forces. And here you are, you're just trying to make a difference as a freshman Democrat in the U.S. House. And here is Trump personally singling you out, personally riling up the racists in this country and screaming how that you need to be sent back home, even though you're clearly a person that loves America. You're serving America. You're serving your constituents. These are hard times. These are very hard times. And I know this has got to be difficult for you. All my best in this. I think you're doing a great job. I don't agree with you all the time politically, but you know what? I agree with you mostly. And that's why you got my vote. And you always get my vote. As long as you represent the fifth as good as you have been. No one likes being put in the historical perspective like this. And it's always hard. So just know that there are millions and millions and millions of people who stand by you right now. Not only in this country, but in Minnesota, in the Minnesota 5th, this country, but also worldwide. And you keep that in mind. And I think you're doing a wonderful job. I'll talk about her response that she put out here a little bit later on. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I'll tell you what, Gary, hold on. I'll get your call after the break. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Hi, this is Chad from AM 950. Snap Construction is arguably the most well-reviewed roofing, siding, window, and insulation contractor in the metro. Ryan is so excited about working with AM 950 and our listeners that he wants to help us grow.
This is Ryan, owner of Snap Construction. I was friends with Chad long before I started marketing with him. I was a bit skeptical of radio advertising before Chad convinced us to run ads. The advertising's been so successful, we want to help the station grow. We've absolutely loved working with the listeners of AM 950, and we all know how extremely important this radio station is to the community. To help AM 950 grow this summer, Snap Construction will be putting up proceeds to assist the station in marketing on social media. Snap Construction encourages you to follow, engage, share, and interact on the AM 950 social media platforms. Together, we can all work to ensure AM 950 continues to thrive and grow in our communities. We stand by our work with a lifetime craftsmanship guarantee. For a free estimate or more information on our financing, call 612-333-SNAP or check us out online.
This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell.
Freddie, this generation of the baby boomers, people are living longer, so the baby boomers are taking care of elderly parents.
Let's talk about your health, and specifically, let's talk about Medicare. Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, and even entertainment.
Catch New Beginnings with Freddie Bell, Saturdays at 11 on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Matt McNeil for Rudy Luther Toyota. Conquer the road trip family vacation. It's easy with a Toyota Sienna. The trick to road trips is to not get exhausted, and as a man who's been behind the wheel for 16-hour days, the Toyota Sienna makes those days comfortable. Roomy, relaxing, and a treat to drive, it makes the long day's drive easy. Highway driving, city driving, or country driving, you'll make it a memorable trip with a Toyota Sienna. And it fits all your gear! Test drive one today at Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
At Better Futures Minnesota, we transform the lives of men and support Minnesota's environment by working towards zero waste. Our approach reaffirms each man's dignity and supports self-sufficiency. Better Futures Minnesota is a work training model. Through our reuse, retail warehouse, and supervised work crews with specialized in residential and commercial building deconstruction, property maintenance, appliance recycling, and janitorial services, we demonstrate ways to employ hard-to-employ men on a pathway to independence. Hire our work crews at BetterFuturesMinnesota.com.
And I do love their breakfast. Oh, yes, indeed. Hazel's Northeast, eatlocalminnesota.com restaurant of the week. Their breakfasts are sensational. Try it this week. Try it this weekend. Go on out there. They've got a great menu there. The biscuits and gravy are very nice. Also, great pancakes, too. It is Hazel's Northeast. Stop on by in Northeast Minneapolis, 952-946-6205. Let's get Gary in here first. Gary is in Minneapolis. Welcome on in, Gary Bear.
Yeah, you know, a renowned broadcaster or journalist at one time, Dan Rather, he was on last night. He said the Democrats have been too meek. They need four or five mouthpieces, a response team. Every time he opens his fat mouth, throw the dirt right back in his face, him and his cronies. And I'll tell you, you know what they are? They're what they become, what they love, money. That's all they are, is money and dirt. You got to give it, get down dirty with them and let them have it, like you're doing. You're doing a good job, Matt. Thanks.
Thank you, Gary. Appreciate it. Granholdt had a really good shot takedown of a Trump stooge last night when basically she was trying to defend these points and her argument. This is Granholdt come back. All these women love this country, serving this country. They were elected to serve America. They are American citizens. How dare you? How dare you tell an American citizen they must go away? This is, to me, is such an un-American argument. Absolutely. 100%. Absolutely. And it is interesting because Ilhan Omar, her response, and I'm not going to disagree with this, because you have to start looking at this in perspective. He's going after, once again, if the people that have to leave, I thought they were illegal people. No, now all of a sudden we have legal people here that, you know, Trump is suggesting need to leave. And for all those people, it's like, well, if you're just saying you don't like America, he's saying to leave. Well, then why did he never tell Bernie Sanders to leave? Bernie Sanders has been very critical of America. And yet I have yet to see Donald Trump, you know, tell him to go back to his ancestral home. This is about race. It's about minority women, minority people, and how, and Trump is basically, his key to win in 2016 was to wink at the racists and say, put me in charge. And I'll be damned if I'm going to sit back here, as I knew this was going to happen. This is the reason why I stayed awake all night election night. I knew this is where this was going, because out of desperation, he's getting more and more racist. And he's driving this country towards more and more fascist territory. Because that's what that was. That was a fascist rally last night. That was a fascist rally telling people who you politically do not agree with to go back home and leading a chant there. Yeah. Ilhan Omar on Thursday told reporters she believes President Trump is fascist, and said his supporters are against the foundations of American democracy. We have said this president is racist. We have condemned his racist remarks. I believe he is fascist, Omar said in response to Trump's attacks on our female workers of color. I want to remind people that this is what the president and his supporters have turned this country, This is supposed to be a country where we're allowed democratic debate and dissent to take place. And so this is not about me. This is about us fighting for what the country truly should be. In recent days, Trump faced intense backlash as he tweeted that Omar, along with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ayanna Presley, and Rashida Tlaib should all go back to their countries. Ocasio-Cortez, Presley, and Tlaib are from the United States, while Omar became a citizen in 2000. Wednesday night rally, Trump supporters doubled down and started chanting, send her back. Matt is in South Minneapolis. Welcome on in, Matt. Thanks for holding.
Hi, yes, Matt. I'm going to say, Ilhan is such a great woman. I put a lot of time and campaign for her, and I've met her in person a number of times, had breakfast with her in Washington, D.C. while campaigning for labor-related issues. And I'm just really saddened by all of this. And I wake up, and I actually fear for her life. I mean, this has just gone way beyond anything I've ever seen in American history. And I'll pull my answer off the air.
Thanks, Matt. I appreciate the phone call. No, Matt, you're exactly right. And they're almost even, the crazy part is going to be, you're going to have some guy, and I really do honestly think someone's going to try to take a shot at Ilhan Omar. And he's going to be screaming, I'm doing it for Trump! I'm doing it for Trump! I'm doing it for Trump! They told me to do it! And they're all the same people are going to be like, why would you think Trump would have anything to do with this? This is just a crazy guy. Well, there's a heck of a lot of crazy guys in the last 3 years who've been threatening people. We just have some guy threaten another Democratic congresswoman, called her up and left a message saying, I'm going to shoot you, for God's sakes. you know, there's a lot of this stuff going on right now. And, you know, it's he seems to be intent on trying to get Ilhan Omar killed. And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez as well. I mean, he seems to be intent on getting those people killed. And in true fascist leader, I mean, if they do get shot, what's he going to say? Well, I told them to leave. Why would they stay? I told them to go. Once again, putting it back on them. That is who these people are. I've said this before. Trump might not be Hitler, but he cosplays Hitler a lot. And you'd think occasionally he'd start taking the costume out. But last night, what you saw there, as a man who was stationed with the U.S. Army in Germany, and I took a history of the Third Reich class to get my college credit for my history while in Germany, what you saw last night was pure Nuremberg rally. That's what that was. That was pure Nuremberg rally. We have brown shirts. We have Nuremberg rallies. We have emboldened racists demanding that people who are different leave. We have concentration camps. Dear God, if we do not get out and vote in unison in 2020, dear God, where will this country be by 2024? Will it even be anything remarkable or that we can recognize? Will it be? I mean, I, like I said, I mentioned the other day, I've been watching this history of World War I, and it's bizarre how the world was fine, then Franz Ferdinand gets killed, and 2 to 3 months later, the entire world was on freaking fire. Every place was fighting everywhere. You had genocides. You had religious persecution. You had war in Africa. You had war on the Pacific. You know, it just was insanity. And I have come to realize, would I be surprised that if in the next 20 years, me and my family had to move out of this country out of persecution? No, I wouldn't be, because we've been so comfortable in this country. When you allow ignorance to fester, you end up having a harder time getting rid of said ignorance. Civil War, the reason that was what we had to do to get rid of slavery. Britain had slavery, France had slavery, a lot of countries had slavery, but they had discussions and they got rid of slavery. In the United States, we allowed this ignorant idea that keeping human beings for slave labor was somehow just and normal. And you kept having president after president after president refusing to deal with the issue. And it got to the point where the South basically said, with the election of Lincoln, we are leaving the Union, and it led to the Civil War. If you do not, you know, squelch this ignorance, it will end up costing us on a far larger scale. And another little bit of a history class for you, if I can. The Revolutionary War, when we talk about the Founding Fathers and breaking apart from Britain, that wasn't all of us together. It was less than a third of this country wanted to have independence from Britain. The majority of people at the beginning of the Revolutionary War wanted to stay with Britain. And even at the end of the Revolutionary War, there's a lot of people that wanted to stay with Britain. But if what that shows you is that you don't necessarily need to have a majority to basically take over a country and defeat a far larger power. If we let this fester, and you have a third of this country who is intent on basically forcing every dollar in this country to have Trump's face on it, and that he can't leave office, and when he does leave office, Ivanka's got to take over. When Ivanka leaves, then it's got to be Jared Kushner has to become the president. Stuff like this happens, people. And if we don't start acknowledging, we have got a really big problem. And by our media not calling this out, and by Democrats not having far harsher standards, and by Republicans swallowing their pride and being quiet, we are at the point where we're having Nuremberg-style rallies in this country. If we don't do something about this, dear God, where are we going to be? Where are we going to be in 5 to 10 years? It's not going to be the country it's not going to be anything we'll recognize in any capacity. Randy is in St. Cloud. Welcome on in, Randy.
Well, thanks. I kind of don't know what to say after that, but I wonder if Representative Presley should go back to... Oh, wait, she's got to figure out where her family came from, and they were kidnapped somewhere.
Yeah, where her ancestors were illegally confiscated, sold to probably the Dutch at that point, brought to a Caribbean island first and separated out, and then brought to the United States, and then put out there, and then had family separated. Yeah, I mean, you know, the idea of being that ignorant to tell a woman who clearly is an American citizen to go back to her country just because she's black. Dear Lord, right. What an ignorant jackass Trump is.
That was a wonderful thing. He's our president.
Yeah. Oh. it's that old adage thing. Thanks, Randy. That old adage of anyone can be president. Well, yay. 952-946-6205. You speaking of St. Cloud. Okay, it's going to change the subject, but it's going to stay on the subject of racism. But I want to give us an answer. Thanks to Minnesota History Magazine, which is actually a good read. I really enjoy this magazine. There's a question that came up today about Jeffrey Epstein. How did he get away with it for so long? He was wealthy and white. And that's the end of the story. And if you want to know the double standard of America, let me share a story out of Minnesota History Magazine that will put the outrageous double standard we still have today in perspective. 952-946-6205. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
I'm Candy Broffel, publisher of the Twin Cities edition of Natural Awakenings magazine and host of Green Tea Conversations, a new show for people who are on a journey to take responsibility for their health and play a more active role in their family's well-being. Join me every Sunday at 10 a.m. as I interview local experts who share the latest in natural holistic approaches in a fun and informative way. So grab a cup of tea and join the conversation as we awaken to natural health. Visit us at naturaltwincities.com.
Habitation Furnishing and Design is simply the best furniture design studio in the Twin Cities. What is a furniture design studio? It's a place where you'll find professional interior designers who are there to help you select the perfect furniture, a single sofa or an entire home. Our designers love making spaces exceptional. When you're shopping for furniture, it makes sense to talk to a professional. Habitation Furnishing and Design, 4317 Excelsior Boulevard in St. Louis Park.
Anytime is the right time to update your music collection, so stop in at the Electric Fetus and browse their massive selection. You'll find everything from rock and pop to international and roots, and so much more, on CD and vinyl. Not only is Electric Fetus the best stop for music, but they also carry a wide and unique range of gifts. Bath products, clothing, books, stationery, candles, incense, you name it. That's the Electric Fetus at 2000 4th Avenue South in Minneapolis and online at efetus.com.
Brending Electrolysis on Grand Avenue in St. Paul has been a leader in permanent hair removal for people of all skin types and backgrounds for over 30 years, celebrating diversity and priding themselves on finding the right treatment plan for each client's individual needs, regardless of race or gender. Services include electrolysis, body waxing, facials, microneedling, and permanent makeup. Book your 60-minute complimentary consultation, including a 15-minute treatment today, for beautiful, lasting results. Visit BrendingElectrolysis.com.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm going to read a lot here in the next few minutes, so I do want to get to this. But you can't solve the problem of racial injustice unless you understand the racial injustice. Jeffrey Epstein is being held without bail at this point because he's a absolute horrible human being. He's more than likely a multiple pedophile. And he's been, he's just a horrible human being. And people saying, how did he get away with this? Well, he got away with it because he's rich and he's white, which has always been the double standard in America. And to understand the difference, I want to take you back in a history lesson here in St. Cloud. By the way, you'll also understand a lot about St. Cloud and their racial problems here when you hear this story. And this is Christopher Lehman's Black Cloud. It's out of the Minnesota History Magazine. It's going to be a little bit of reading here, so hold tight with me, okay? More than a century ago, a small community of refugees from African descent lived in St. Cloud, Minnesota. They resettled there to flee the violence and oppression of the Jim Crow South. Some of them were ex-slaves, compromising a fraction of the town's 10,000 people. This African-American community never exceeded 20 people. 20 people. They worked as porters, day laborers, barbers, and some operated independent businesses. In 1910, the community consisted of two single men, two couples, two families. The families included the first African-American children raised to adulthood in the city, and those children attended desegregated public schools. In the 1910s, however, this community collapsed. The number of residents sank to single digits and remained there for more than 40 years. The independent business closed. No African Americans attended the city's public and private schools after the early 1910s because no African American children lived in the city. The community's young adults vacated, leaving behind only their parents' generation. By 1920, none of the African Americans who had lived in St. Cloud in 1910 still resided there. A few newcomers arrived in the 1920s, but the community stayed in the single digits until the 1960s. African-American slavery shaped St. Cloud's first decade. Founded in 1856, the town drew wealthy southern slave owners who, during summer months, vacationed in Upper Town, the northernmost section, for the cooler season climate. Some of them purchased real estate there. About one dozen southerners of English and Irish descent permanently left their homes in Tennessee and Virginia to reside year-round in St. Cloud. By purchasing land, they controlled the town's politics through pro-slavery Democratic Party at that point. German Catholic immigrants who comprised the section known as Middletown supported the Democrats for their favorable standards towards both immigrants and Catholics. This party affiliation aligned the German immigrants with advocates of slavery. Southern St. Cloud, known as Lower Town, was the domain of anti-slavery Republicans of Scottish and German heritage who had moved there from the East Coast. During the Civil War, the enslavers left St. Cloud with their slaves, and the Middletowners remained in the Democratic Party. They outnumbered the Republicans in neighboring Lower Town, which meant the Democrats continued to rule city government. And once again, at this point, the Democrats at this point were the pro-slavery party. The Republicans were the anti-slavery party. That switched in the 1960s, where the Republicans today are the party of racial intolerance, and the Democrats are the party of racial acceptance. Moving ahead. So, I mean, there's a long history of racial issues in St. Cloud. Local anti-African-American sentiment remained strong outside of Lower Town and the southeast side. In 1910, African-American boxer Jack Johnson defeated European-American champion Jim Jeffries in a championship match, and European-Americans who gathered outside the St. Cloud Times building for bulletins were incensed over the outcome. A reporter mused, "It was doubtful if a colored man would have escaped from the crowd had one been there." The four African-American employees at the Grand Central nearby likely held their celebrations privately in the rooms in the kitchen, if not in the hotel in the kitchen, if not in their rooms. The St. Cloud Times continued to malign arrivals of African-Americans. In 1913, a visiting African-American baseball team twice defeated St. Cloud's team, the Pretzels, and the team basically mocked the team manager, Samuel Gordon, with extremely unfortunate racial tones. A few years later, when the Great Northern Railway temporarily brought 10 African-Americans to St. Cloud to break a union strike, the Times claimed that they were robbing people but provided no proof of the accusation. Just as Woodrow Wilson segregated Washington, D.C. in the 1910s, St. Cloud adopted a more aggressive practice for Jim Crow. For example, Central Minnesota Baseball League voted to assign only European players for the 1915 season, ensuring that no more African-American players would defeat them. Furthermore, a downtown restaurant not only restricted African-American diners to a specific time frame in a separate section, but also charged them an extra for the segregation. The restaurant desegregated after African-American customer contacted county attorney Paul Ailes, a Lower Town resident, who then reminded the manager that Minnesota state law required desegregated public accommodations. Moreover, St. Cloud Times owner Frederick Chapoon supported segregationist Woodrow Wilson's campaign for re-election, served a national delegate in the nomination for him. Then the unthinkable happened. In the fall of 1917, Catherine Tierk, a 25-year-old woman from St. Cloud's German-American community, began fraternizing with an African-American, and his 20 name's James Boozer. She met with him a few times downtown at the Nemec Theater, where he ran the projector. He had moved to St. Cloud 1 year earlier from South Carolina, where he had worked at the same land where his grandfather had toiled as a slave. His new job as projectionist allowed him to financially support his widowed grandmother. One night after Boozer's shift ended, he and Tyrk left the Nemec together, and Boozer walked her 4 blocks to her house in Middletown. By accompanying her, he prevented her from having to walk the streets alone at night. Tyrk's German Catholic neighbors, however, were unaccustomed to seeing an African-American man in their part of town. Middletowners tolerated the presence of African-Americans downtown and in lower town. Boozer, however, violated cultural norms by not entering the community, but also by courting one of the women. As the affair reverberated throughout St. Cloud, Boozer and other local African-Americans suffered the repercussions. The Nemec's management fired Boozer. The theater never hired another African-American. Boozer's dismissal reduced St. Cloud's African-American community once again to only domestic blacks and barbers. Delimitations that would remain for more than a generation. Meanwhile, some Middletowners were determined to lynch Boozer by hanging if he did not stop fraternizing with Tyrk. This was not the first time such threats had been made in Minnesota, for throughout the state's history, angry mobs had attempted to kill and occasionally succeed in killing people suspected of committing crimes. The victims represented various ethnic backgrounds, but the majority were African Americans and Native Americans. The danger to Boozer's life fit this historical pattern. Moreover, the mob ignored that Tyrk engaged with Boozer, and it never threatened her nor gave her the responsibility for ending the relationship. Police Chief Edward Brick prevented mob violence by taking place, but at a great cost to Boozer. To quell the public outcry, Brick ordered Boozer, but not Tyrk, out of St. Cloud. Boozer agreed to leave his home behind, fleeing the city on November 26, according to the St. Cloud Times. A Southern family making St. Cloud their home offered to shelter him, but he refused. In the end of the month, Boozer had resettled to Minneapolis. The whole affair put Brick in an uncomfortable position. The chief and some of his officers were neighbors of the Tyrks in residential Middletown, but the police had not prevented Boozer from entering the neighborhood or fraternizing with Tyrk. This fact further incensed Middletowners. When a mob formed a response to Boozer's breach of their section of town, the vigilantes implied that they would provide protection if Brick did not. The expulsion satisfied the mob, and no violence occurred that day. However, the police's actions in the name of defending Middletown cost Boozer his civil rights, which the police refused to defend. So let's make sure we understand this. This idea of a guy like Jeffrey Epstein, wealthy white guy, trust me, we have a history of this country of them committing crimes, and we ignore it because they're wealthy white people. And here's an African-American guy working hard, trying to make a living in St. Cloud, just happens to fall in love with a white woman. And that was his only crime. And they ran him out of town. Go back to where you came from, I imagine might have been something they would have said. This, if we do not acknowledge the starting point for each of these races, the white race and basically every other race in this country, is wildly different, then we can't solve this problem. So when ignorant fools call my radio show and say, what do you mean go back home is a bad thing? That is on me to basically shut that idiot down. And I did. And I will do it again. Because you thinking there's equal rights in this country just because you don't want to acknowledge the historical discretions that have been here where whites get away with everything and the minorities get away with nothing, that is not an excuse for you to tolerate racism. And we will not go back as long as I'm breathing and I'm a U.S. citizen. I will refuse to go back to those times. But we got a fight ahead of us. 2020, people. 2020. And trust me, every Republican will show up and vote for Trump. Be prepared. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.